Day, and it is April the 15th, and this is the education sub of Ways and Means, and we are here today to deal with the OHSU budget. We had a lengthy hearing yesterday with the higher ed people, and we didn't get through everybody, so we are going to schedule another opportunity, and that will be next Wednesday. So next Wednesday, we will have an opportunity for those people that came all the way here and didn't get a chance to testify yesterday and others.
And, Mr. Chair, just to be official, the date would be April 22nd, next Wednesday.
April 22nd.
And we will check on the room.
Okay. But it'd probably be like it back in C.
I would guess it's in C or E again.
Okay. Okay. And Joe Robinson is here today. Do we just start with him, or do you want to say something?
Nope, I would keep moving.
Good to see you again, sir.
Likewise.
Always welcome.
Good morning, Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp. I'm Dr. Joe Robertson. This is our Provost, Dr. Jenny Mladenovic, and we are delighted to be here this morning to speak about the OHSU budget and provide an overview. And I say we're delighted because there's nothing I would rather do than talk about OHSU. Let's see. Yeah. And I think we will start out with an overview here that is actually quite familiar to everyone in this room, but I think it is worth restating. And the first statement right there, the vision, actually comes directly out of our strategic plan, which was created in 2007. I actually think it is very much worth rereading. It says OHSU will partner to make Oregon a national leader in health and science innovation for the purpose of improving the health and well-being of Oregonians. Now, I'm not certain that everyone at OHSU can repeat that verbatim, but I can tell you that they can tell you what the essence of that statement is. And the essence of that statement is that we're an organization that's about partnership. We're a statewide, state-based organization, and we take that very seriously. And this is the driver of everything that we do. And through the partnership, we work with that, with collaboration and innovation, and that is the heart and soul of our institution. You're familiar with our four missions. I won't go into the detail of each, but I think what's important about this is that because of the multiplicity of these missions, having multiple missions makes us do each one better. And I think that's specifically worth bringing out when we're talking about healthcare. We provide better health care because the individuals at OHSU are training the next generation of providers. Those people are nipping at our heels, making us think about what we're doing, asking important questions, and because we're doing research, we are accumulating data and we are finding ways to improve quality. Now, I apologize. We are from academia, so we have too many slides. It is our nature. We can't help it. So realizing that and that the time is short.
Madam Co-Chair.
74?
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Kopp. I thought it was better. I have an old adage that says, confess early, confess often. So I follow that. I thought it was better to just... So it will be the reason that I will delve into some of these more than others. And, you know, we're setting the stage with the first couple. We won't spend this long with all of them. As you know, we're a nonprofit public corporation, and the Oregon legislature had the great wisdom in 1995 to create this public corporation. I tell you honestly, I believe this sincerely, we have the best enabling legislation of any public academic health center in the country. As we travel around the country, everyone is very envious of the status, and I think it's part of the reason that we've been so successful. We receive the yearly appropriation, which we try to use in the legislatively mandated manner. We've had the good fortune of having a wonderful board and terrific chairs. There's been a lot of talk about, obviously, university governance in the past few years, so I think it's worth making a couple comments here. Yes, we are a university. We are very proud of that. It's the essence of our DNA. It's a rich heritage, but we are also more than a university. 70% of the finances at OHSU relate to the health system. And that is, I think, one of the reasons that the legislature had the wisdom to create a governance that is slightly different for us than if we were just a university. And I think one of the reason it is that it continues to be different and will and probably always will. So here's a summary of the state general fund investments. These are the specific areas. These have been the areas for quite some time, except for the Scholars for a Healthy Oregon, which was funded during the last year of the last biennium, for which we do seek funding for both bienniums. I mean, for both years of the biennium this year. And this is a breakdown of the current service level with the inflationary impact. I think it would be difficult to justify talking about OHSU at this particular time without giving you an update about the Knight Cancer Challenge, and it is good news. We have raised more than $462 million, including the ever-important $200 million from the state of Oregon. And you see here, this is a very impressive list of donors, and it is one of many things that I think has continued to help raise the national status of OHSU and give us more of a national presence. So it's been great.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Robertson, there were some contingencies with the Knight contribution contingent upon $500 million match. Is that correct?
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, Representative Huffman, that's absolutely correct. The contingency was that Phil and Penny Knight will give us $500 million if we raise an additional $500 million.
So very, very close.
And we are very close, and they were delighted about the support from the state. They saw that, you know, as both state government and statewide support for something that was very important. And I think obviously the initial pledge by Phil and Penny, without it, none of this would have happened. But the state stepping up in the manner that it did provided a validity to this, made it real, and was a tremendous catalyst. And not only that, as you will see in one of the later slides, which I will then be able to almost skip, and it advanced the whole timetable for the project by 2 years, because we then became so confident that we could start all of the creation of the construction documents and the very specific planning.
Follow-up?
Go ahead.
And the hope was actually $700 million rather than $500.
Yes.
So is that kind of tracking to kind of meet that goal?
Yes, you are very well versed. We had pledged to raise $1 billion for the program, the cancer program. The allocation from the $200 million from the state will be for buildings. There will be two. There will be a basic science research building that will be built just north of our current collaborative life sciences building, and there will be that $160 million will go for that, and $40 million will go on to a clinical trials center that will be atop a new building that we are building just south of the Center for Health and Healing, which is the building at the base of the tram. That's going on top of this other hospital building that we're building so that we can take advantage of the ancillary services and the image and something, and again, best leverage resources.
Thank you.
Doctor, could you, a couple inches back from the microphone would help. Thank you.
Relax.
Thank you.
I'm
excited.
These mics are very sensitive. You mentioned the tram. The tram cost, what, $85 million, something like that. It was very controversial. A lot of people thought it was a boondoggle. Now that you've been operating the tram for a couple of years, what can you tell us about its efficacy with respect to your whole project and your whole operation?
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, I can tell you it has been a smashing success. We have over 100,000 riders a month on the tram. We soon will be approaching 1.5 million riders a year. I commented to someone just the other day how when I leave campus in the afternoon after work, I'm up on the hill. It is much easier, despite the tremendous growth of OHSU, to get off the hill now than it was, 10 years ago. Okay, it's been an absolute and unequivocal success. It was obviously very controversial at the time. I haven't heard any criticism of the tram for years, and I think it's a great source of pride. And I've been told that it's the most frequented tourist site in Portland.
Ah.
Mr. Co-Chair?
Madam Co-Chair.
I've heard that people are so impressed that after hours, they sometimes even have a wedding in the tram.
Co-Chair Com, Co-Chair Monroe, I have heard the same thing. I was not able to witness that. I'm still hoping that they'll film a Spider-Man movie there as well.
The Mass Marvel? Or?
And this is a timeline that I referred to. This is a busy slide. It shows you that there are people that are watching the construction timeline, but the bottom line is because of the state stepping up in the manner that it did, we've advanced the project and are hoping for the completion of the construction related to the Knight Cancer Challenge by the fall of 2018. And it is not just about OHSU in Portland. There is very much a statewide component to this. Through the community partnership, this is an outreach to improve care through the rest of the state. We have cited for you some specific examples, and you see those range across a variety of communities from areas of cancer registry, cancer screening, and telemedicine. Now, we have Dr. Mladenovic, our provost. For those of you that don't know the exact job description of the provost, it is vast and all-encompassing, and anything the president doesn't want to do, but also includes very specifically the notation of chief academic officer. So she will talk about our research and education missions.
She would be equivalent to a dean.
This is in the hierarchy. The provost, deans report to the provost.
Ah, okay. The dean is, so you're the dean's boss.
Yes, maybe.
Welcome. Why don't you go ahead and identify yourself?
Thank you, co-chairs Monroe. My name is Jenny Mladenovic, and I do have the privilege of serving as the provost and executive vice president at OHSU, and this is my first time testifying in front of this committee, so thank you. So, as you know, we are privileged to be a graduate institution, essentially, for professional schools that really makes us very different from many of the other universities that you hear about, as our focus really is about creating tomorrow's workforce for science and healthcare. As you know, we partner with other institutions around many of our programs, including our wonderful School of Pharmacy with OSU, and we are in the process of becoming accredited for a School of Public Health with Portland State University. We also have a number of nursing campuses throughout the state, which basically supplies the majority of the nurses in the state, and we have partnerships with OIT around some of our other programs. These are the numbers of students, again, essentially graduate students, that are funded through the school state, that are supported by the state, the School of Dentistry, Medicine, and Nursing. We also train the majority.
I'm co-chair.
Yes, co-chair.
Oh, I apologize. You could have finished your sentence. Yesterday, we heard passionate testimony from students. And one of the statements that was made by a student that is in her undergrad program is that she wants to become a dentist, but she anticipates a $400,000 debt. Is that real?
So our students do have large debt dollars. We are seriously tackling that. and are making progress. We believe that for our students, the SHOE program actually helps with that, which we will describe.
Okay.
All professional students have large debt. We've put in two major programs. One is a financial debt counselor, which has become the model for the United States, actually, and actually gives total debt counseling and financial counseling to every student from the time they begin to the time they graduate. And the other program we put in is basically the Tuition Promise, which is new in the last couple of years, which is you enter with a tuition and we do not increase it while you're in your degree program.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Co-Chairman Rowe. What is the tuition for 1 year of dentistry school?
Probably in the $30,000 range, but we will get back to you with the exact number as all the tuition changes every year on the entry level. Okay. So we'll provide that to you.
I was just curious. Thank you.
Yes. So as you know, thanks to the participation of the state and our $295 million budget for our new collaborative life science building, we were able to complete this on time and within budget, and it has virtually revolutionized how we educate and what we can do. This is an incredible opportunity for everybody in the health professions at OHSU and actually throughout the country, as we've had many visitors who come to see what we are doing in this building and how it has the potential to change how we educate. Within this building also is a major simulation center, 20,000 square feet, dedicated to all sorts of simulation so that we can practice before we practice on patients. And this is a simulation center that will serve the community, not just students, undergraduate students, pipeline students, and graduate students, but also practitioners throughout the community to keep their skills up to date. This building has also allowed us to take on some novel science and to create a new dental school, which is wonderful. And again, a leading opportunity for us in the country.
That building was built on the site that was donated by the Snitzers.
Yes.
I was at the Grand at that, I don't know, it seems like it was just yesterday, but 6 or 8 years ago. And so, you know, we really have a wonderful opportunity for public-private ownership with that donation by the Snitzers, with the Knight Challenge. It's really remarkable. Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and this is to the committee members. If you have not gone up and seen this building, it is worth a half a day or a day to go up and see the multiple facets that are in this building. I'm kind of a geek, but I was impressed in how they did the construction on the base floor, because they built a trench around the actual building so that if there's seismic activity, there's the airspace and the compression between the actual two walls so that the research machinery does not get damaged or interrupted. It's just like, wow, who thought of that? talk about a new wave of protecting our buildings and the mission with digging down that trench to have that space. The whole thing was incredibly beautiful.
Is it a moat, Madam Co-Chair?
Yes. I mean, literally. And it's like, that's the best description I'd give of
it. Filled with water sports, that would be pretty.
Okay.
It's only 6 inches wide or something. Come on.
Mr.
Yes, and Doug is saying, let's move.
Okay.
Thank you, Co-Chair Comp. I would like to now describe the impact of the SHOE program, which was established last legislative season, and it has allowed us to allocate $2.5 million to students from Oregon for Oregon. And again, this is a program about giving students free rides for tuition in exchange for their commitment to practice in our underserved and rural communities.
Yep.
So I would just like to mention eligibility. This is a program for the first time ever that crosses all of our clinical practice degrees. This is unique nationally, as I know of no other program like this. As you can see, there are abilities to have students enter at all levels. So how do we determine who is eligible for this? We do know that students who come from rural communities are likely to go back to rural communities. So that is an important aspect of who is eligible. But we also recognize that it is students from underserved communities who come from very diverse backgrounds who otherwise would never believe they could accomplish this goal, as debt would cripple them and debt would actually preclude their ability to even think about the possibility. So we are also very interested in partnering with Oregon's four regional universities to basically deliver a continuum to students who enter those schools into our school.
And one of our goals with that program was to encourage more of our medical students to go into GP, general practitioners, which are needed in those rural or underserved areas. Have you got any statistics yet on whether or not the number of your students that are going into general practice has increased vis-a-vis those that are going into specialties where they might make more money?
With respect to the Shoei program, Co-Chair Monroe and Co-Chair Comp, this is the first year of the program, so they're entering students in their first year.
Okay. Well, I hope you will keep those numbers so that in 2 years and 4 years you can come back and report how well this program is going, because Representative Comp and I fought hard to make sure that it was funded.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair Monroe and Comp. I'd just like to describe the first year worth of experience for this program. 89 applications were received. We awarded 21 within the $2.5 million. They ended up being awarded in these arenas. And for those of you who are not aware, many times it is the advanced practice nurses and the PAs who do stay in rural Oregon or rural communities. And here you can see where those students came from. 11 students did receive bachelor degrees from our own schools, and 61% reported growing up in a medically underserved community. This is what the applicant pool looked like, and you can see from the applicant pool that there were many more actually who were interested in this program who were not from rural arenas. But when we gave out the dollars, it went again to students who were from predominantly rural or underserved communities. I'd just like to take the moment to read the testimony of three students who are very passionate about this program. They could not testify today as they're all engaged in their education and could not be extracted, but they're very brave in being able to tell their stories here. And as you can see, here's our medical student from Albany who wants to practice in Enterprise, Oregon. And her quotation that's really important, I believe, is that without knowing I would receive this scholarship before I committed to OHSU, I would have committed to a different school that had already offered me a scholarship. So this is really a recruitment tool for us and allows us to compete for our very best students who have opportunities elsewhere. Here's our dentistry student who actually grew up in Gresham of an immigrant family, first generation, was the PSU commencement speaker, very passionate student who is a first generation college student. It is clear that as an immigrant to the United States that's lived through poverty and unfortunately lacked a lot of traditional funding sources of other students, becoming a dentist seemed out of my reach or just a dream. Shoei has not only caused this dream to come true, but has granted me the opportunity to continue to support and be an example for the community that I grew up in, but this time as a dentist. And finally, Kiva Sopwell, who is a PA student, moved to Portland at age 18, struggled with addiction and homelessness, completed a recovery at Central City Concern and Old Time Clinic, both of which are interprofessional clinic where we have students within that clinic. She is a first-generation college student, studied psychology and biology at PSU, and in the worst way wants to be a physician assistant who returns to critical access areas. I cannot begin to express my gratitude for the Shoei Scholarship. The scholarship will allow me to have a manageable amount of debt upon graduation. I will be able to buy a home, something no one in my family has really ever had. I will be able to do so even while working in an underserved area with a somewhat lower salary. I will be able to donate services through organizations like Project Access Now, ensuring that all people have access to the best care possible, regardless of status or resource. I am living my dream. So now, how are we doing in our educational outcome? And I will move quickly through these slides. Here are our first-year entering nursing students, Oregonian targets, first-year MD students that are Oregon residents, first-year DMD students that are Oregon residents, total degrees and certificates awarded, again, outcomes. And again, I just remind you that our targets are in the line and our accomplishments are in the bars. DMD degrees awarded, total MD degrees awarded, graduate degrees and certificates awarded in all nursing programs. And finally, moving briefly to our major research mission. As you know, we are a large research-intensive institution. Of 877 institutions that receive over $1 million in NIH funding, we are ranked 26th, according to the Blue Ridge rankings. We are also...
Co-chair.
Yes,
excuse me for not knowing. NIH is what?
National Institute of Health.
Thank you.
We are also one of the first institutions in the country to receive the Translational Science Award, which helps us take our discoveries and put them into practice across all breadth of research. We have some amazing leading discoveries, which you can see here, just to name a few. Here is our total sponsored research awards. Again, I would like to note that the era of funding that came to OHSU made a huge impact on us, and we have been able to maintain that, where that is not true for many institutions throughout the country. In the state, OHSU leads in total research dollars. And finally, the economic impact of these dollars are very large indeed. Much of the money comes from out of state, 93%. They really are like small businesses. Every time we get a grant, it is not just to one person, but requires the building of a team and employing more individuals. So the multiplier effect of Oregon's OHSU's research grants are estimated to be 2.13, and that is for every dollar we bring in, we contribute $2.13 to Oregon's economy. And that effect for 2014 was an additional $758 million to Oregon's economy. Research at OHSU also leads to new businesses, as you can see here. We disclose patents and inventions, and we create and spin out new businesses. So in 2014, we did also issue a record 80 license agreements. So now I will turn the mic back over to Dr. Robertson.
Thank you. And I may pick up the pace a little bit here because we pledged to get through the slides. And, you know, I wanted to talk about our clinical care mission, and with the exception of the CDRC, there are not the direct state appropriations that go to the clinical mission, but that it is so the rest of our missions are interdependent upon it. So this shows the magnitude of the enterprise, nearly 1 million patient visits We have multiple indicators of quality. We were particularly proud of the fact that in the past year we've been selected by the University Health System Consortium as having the best best quality of pediatric care of any of those hospitals. And basically those are the elite children's hospitals there, the Children's Hospital and Academic Health Centers. We say we're two hospitals, with Dornbecker being the children's hospital and adult hospital. They operate under one license, though, and there's a real synergy of having them together. We have a total of 572 beds, and it's the educational platform, a part of the educational platform, since we also have students on rotations throughout the state, and we are a regional center. As I said before, it's so interwoven with our other missions. I want you also to see on this slide that we are overseen by METI, obviously oversight by groups such as you at the legislature is very important, but I think the last time I checked, we have 70-some accrediting bodies, and all of those come through looking at every bit and parcel of OHSU, including the finances, just so that you have the reassurance that others are looking at as well. This is one of many slides that I will show that have lots of dots that shows we're doing lots of things in lots of places. It's basically the theme of these slides. This will show we have varying degrees of clinical involvement in it scattered around the state, often primary care, but also in specialty areas. This is a map that shows how our care is scattered around the state. It varies a little bit from year to year, but roughly 50% of our patients come from the Tri-County area and 50% of our patients come from the remainder of the state. The healthcare is changing. We know about healthcare transformation. We're changing the way that we provide healthcare, but healthcare as an industry is also changing. Like all industries, they ultimately go through a period of rapid consolidation. Healthcare is doing that at this time. At OHSU, we are trying to be a convening force to work with others using our philosophy of partnership and collaboration to provide even a larger system. We think having scale is very important to achieve healthcare transformation. If you're going to manage a population, you need a large population. We are working with others to make sure that there is a large Oregon-based system. We think it's very important for the welfare of the state for there to be a large Oregon-based system, and quite frankly, we do not feel that we want to have happen to healthcare what happened to Forest Products. We don't want to wake up one day and find that all the corporate headquarters are outside the state. So we are working actively to provide an Oregon system. This shows to some degree the scope of our services. While we are physically present for many of those, this shows the innovative way that we have used telemedicine. This does many things. It improves the quality of care. It actually allows patients to avoid travel, and it actually also improves the care and improves the economies in the local communities. This is the part of the clinical enterprise that is specifically mandated and partially funded by the state, the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center, or the CDRC. I think the demands for the service are much greater than people realize. That's what this slide is really showing. And unfortunately, that burden is unusually severe in rural Oregon, and unfortunately, the burden continues to grow. So this is a critical, important function. This shows some of the wide variety of the disorders that are treated. I think what you can readily see is these are not simple. These are complex disorders that require a team-based approach. The key to the CDRC is that much of this care is provided on a local basis. We do have the expertise, obviously, in Portland, but there is a very strong component of outreach in this program, as demonstrated by another one of these maps with the METI dots. These are our KPMs. There is currently this year we are experiencing some turnover and shortage of public health nurses, so there is one program that is not meeting its goal, but in the other programs we've exceeded our goals, and we will work to address that shortage of public health nurses. Continuing on to outreach, again, this is fundamental to who we are, one of the many ways we connect with all of the state. What you will see on this slide is a wide variety of services, from dentistry to preschool screening to the poison center. There's just this vast array of services. One of these that I think is fundamentally important to the welfare, especially of our young children, is the Oregon Poison Center. That's Mr. Yuck, that's up in the right-hand corner. And there, I think, especially among young mothers and kids, there's a tremendous familiarity with Mr. Yuck. And I had a chance to ask several young mothers recently, and they are very familiar with this. The pediatricians and the hospitals are great about handing out the literature, handing out, you know, these stickers, so they go on the phone and they're in the home. And so this information is available if, unfortunately, it's needed. And the goal is to be able to, manage as many of these accidents as possible in the home. And, of course, our area health education centers, the core here about the AHEC is to provide rural experiences for students that enhances care in rural Oregon, but also ultimately ends up facilitating the placement of additional providers in rural Oregon. And our Office of Rural Health, which reports to the provost here, is another way we reach out to support health services throughout the rural aspects of the state. This shows how committed we are to making sure that our students have a rural experience. Not only do they have one, it is so often that they come back and actually report that that's been the favorite rotation that they've had during the course of their training. We have a multitude of other pipeline programs working with specific communities, working with OMSI to make sure that we have a robust pipeline. And again, as the provost noted in one of her slides, if you are a healthcare professional in training and you're from an underserved area, you're six times more likely to go serve that constituency. So these pipeline programs are of critical importance. And we see here that we use the Office of Rural Health employs not only the funds provided by the state, but is very effective in leveraging those to obtain federal dollars. I think any discussion of OHSU would be incomplete without a close look at the finances. This shows the multitude of the financial streams that support our institution. Every one of them is critically important. And again, I would note this is, this is the annual budget. And when people look at this, I think it's important to realize that the state's support is much greater than the slice of the pie that's just demonstrated in the state appropriation, not only through the annual support that we receive through the coverage of the bonds, but also in the strategic nature of the relationship between OHSU and the state of Oregon. And that strategic relationship and the ability to seize the moment at the appropriate time to leverage resources and do something that is good for the state. There's a rich history now that goes back to our enabling legislation, the Oregon Opportunity, the development of the CLSB, and then obviously the Knight Cancer Challenge. So yes, there is the support on the biennial basis, but there's also a very important strategic relationship that I think it's very important to acknowledge. You'll see that even from our academic programs here, we need to seek sources outside those of the traditional sources of state support and tuition. An example of this that you might not be aware of are training of residents. Okay, this we do get federal funding. We don't get state support, but we get federal funding to support residents. But there's a cap on that, and we are 170 some residents over the cap for which we are given federal funding. That means that OHSU has to go out and find about $14 million to continue training as many residents as we do. So we are continuously looking for other sources of income to support our educational programs. And much of the funding also comes directly from our health system. This shows the appropriation and does include the debt service, as I noted earlier. And you will see here on the slide for 15 and 17 that it does include at that point some of the initial debt service for the Knight Cancer Challenge bonds. And you will also see with a relatively flat appropriation how we have significantly continued to increase the number of trainees. I absolutely love this slide because I came to OHSU in 1979 as a resident. I don't know why the data from 1980 is not there, but we've searched and searched and we don't seem to be able to find it. But still, I joined the faculty in 1985. So over the past 30 years, I have been able to personally witness this growth, three times the number of employees and nearly an order of magnitude increase in scale. This shows how we have managed our financial performance over the past several years. We have worked very hard to get our financial house in order, and I think you can see this slide reflects, it's very interesting, it's a sort of a mirror image of the severity of the Great Recession. The Great Recession is reflected in this slide, but coincident with that was our refinancing of the Center for Health and Healing. We had to post during this period of time about $180 million of collateral to obtain a letter of credit to refinance CHH, because when that building was built at the base of the tram, we actually used the financial capacity of the medical group rather than university funds to build that building. But now at this time, we were merging the medical group, and then at that time, the university needed to buy the building that was owned by the medical group. So that's another one of the reasons for the dip, but we are currently very pleased to have 200 days of cash on hand. From the financial performance that you've seen, you can see how our bond rating has improved. At least one of the rating agencies has now also given us a favorable outlook. Here's a quick glimpse at our capital budget. Again, you will see, as with all aspects of the finances for OHSU, we need multiple sources, but you will see the greatest source for our capital expenditure comes from our health systems and our health system operations. The rating agencies look very carefully at the debt service ratio. We've improved that dramatically over the past decade. And this is really my concluding slide. I think we are very proud of the fact that from the depth of the recession until I sit here today, we've added nearly 2,500 jobs. We only have the formal postings for the past year, but as we again today, we're right hovering around that 15,000 number. And I like to remind people that, yes, we're very proud of the fact that OHSU is a very significant economic engine for the state, but it's an economic engine because that's not because that's our primary role, but we become an economic engine when we fulfill our mission and do our job well. So thank you very much for your support and for your attention, and I know we would be delighted to answer any questions.
Yeah, during the recession, if I remember right, you laid off 1,000 people?
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, it was not that many. It was a few hundred. It was in the hundreds. We did not reach, in my memory, I don't think we reached 1,000.
Okay. I remember it was dramatic.
It was dramatic. And we did it carefully, and a lot of those were through positions we didn't fill. But there was a significant drop. Yeah, I think.
Questions for Dr. Robinson?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, you see. Yeah, it was in the hundreds, yes.
Madam Co-Chair.
This is a personal question. You have every right not to answer it. But this morning's Oregonian announced what the new president of the U of O potentially will receive as a salary. Is your salary commensurate to that, or do you know, or
Co-chair Monroe, co-chair Comp. I did not see the number this morning, but I would imagine mine is, in all honesty.
Well, it was like 446 million or 460, not million, thousands. I'm sorry, it was even bigger, 666,000 starting.
And I was a member of the search committee. This is full disclosure. Okay, so I actually was witness to much of the discussion, and there was a considerable discussion and debate about the salary, but there was also a great deal of time spent looking at the compensation base of people in equivalent positions around the country. I also know that the new board felt that this was a very important hire. There was a great deal of due diligence done in selecting this individual. And I'm delighted to say, as that someone on the search committee, I won't speak about any specific candidates, but I could not be more pleased with the selection of the individual. And also, by being on the search committee, I had the opportunity to, you know, engage in discussion. And I think the expectation has clearly been set for the continued and even further collaboration between our institutions.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
We're looking for a new deputy superintendent. So if you have any recommendations of some of the team, we can't offer that type of salary here at the State Department of Education, but good people are hard to find, and it's very important that our state really excels to the level that you have shown us with at OHSU and so at other institutions. And seriously, our OEIB, HEC, and K-12 system has become very, very complex, and I don't know what decision is going to be made about what the caliber of that person is, but it's on all of our minds. So.
Oh, yeah.
But thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Roblin, did you have questions?
Nope. I'm very pleased.
Anybody else? Thank you very much. It's always good to see you. You know where my office is.
Thank you.
All the members of the committee, thank you so much.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, we have, I think, six people signed up for public testimony relating to OHSU. Do you want me to call
them? Go ahead.
Okay, so we'll take three first, and then the next three. First three are Elizabeth Remley, Sarah Paith, and Liska Havel. I apologize up front if I'm not pronouncing them properly. And roughly 3 minutes each is what we usually allocate.
Good morning and welcome. Introduce yourself and go ahead.
Okay. Co-chairs Monroe and Comp, members of the committee. I'm Elizabeth Remley, here today on behalf of the Oregon Society of Physician Assistants. We work with about 1,500 licensed PAs in the state of Oregon, and we're here to support OHSU's budget. OHSU trains between 36 and 40 PAs every year within their School of Medicine. The PA school prepares physician assistants for the practice of medicine and the delivery of team-based primary care services to a diverse population, including the medically underserved. And they contribute to meeting the workforce needs and challenges in Oregon. OHSU's PA program is a model of excellence in PA education, and it is key to advancing the PA profession in Oregon. The state funding for the PA program at OHSU includes four positions in the Scholars for a Healthy Oregon. The first four PAs received a Scholars for a Healthy Oregon scholarship in 2014. Like OHSU medical students, none of them could be here today, so I'm going to share with you a quote from Kiva Stoutwell, a PA who received this scholarship from OHSU. I'm just going to read this quote from what this has meant for her. This scholarship has given me the financial freedom to serve the populations who most direly need it. without the constraint of massive student loan repayments. By the time I was 22, I had been hospitalized 3 times due to complications of extreme alcohol abuse. I was homeless. I was unemployed and unemployable. Slowly, with incredible support from my community, I began to grow up. My unique set of experiences relative to the typical clinician background are what compelled me to enter medicine. Unfortunately, there are few of us who make it to the world of traditional academia. And to those that do, the burden of massive debt often limits our choices. With my background, I am not usually the person these scholarships are looking for. Again, I'd like to thank the legislature for the incredible opportunities that have been given to me through the state and its many social programs, particularly for this scholarship, which will allow me to achieve all of my dreams while giving back to the state that has raised me, a place that I love. Kiva's incredible story is just one of many through the program, the Scholars for a Healthy Oregon program. OSPA strongly supports the OHSU Scholars for a Healthy Oregon initiative and encourages the committee to fully fund both years of the biennium.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let me have my external hard drive with me as well. Co-chairs Morrell and Comp, as well as committee members, my name is Lishka Havel, for the record. I'm an MD MPH student at OHSU, currently working on my coursework for my master's in public health. And I am also a participant in the primary loan forgiveness program, which is why I'm here today. I grew up in a small town in Oregon, not that far from here, the daughter of a teacher and an entrepreneur. And I first knew that I wanted to be a doctor when I entered high school. This was due in part to being part of the Dornbecker Club that is ubiquitous around the state, as well as volunteering in my mom's classroom. And it was in these opportunities that I saw the ways in which many children's lives were changed and their pathways in life were changed due to illness and disability. And I realized I wanted to protect individuals' potential so that they weren't compromised on that pathway in any fashion. And for that, for me, meant that I wanted to be a doctor. And furthermore, it meant that I wanted to be a rural practitioner and work with those patients who otherwise would not have access to care. My specialty choice in medical school has not always been the same, but my vision of working in a rural area is something that has not wavered. I'm well aware of the opportunities for higher pay that come with urban practice and the additional hats that come along with being a rural physician. In part, to take away a few hurdles from my journey, I applied to the Primary Care Loan Forgiveness Program. This, I thought, would remove a barrier for me to practicing in a rural area, and also would support my belief that I could and should become a rural physician. Furthermore, being part of the Primary Loan Forgiveness Program allowed me to work less during medical school, to dedicate myself to my studies, and participate in more extracurricular activities that offered me further learning opportunities. I also felt supported in my decision to become a rural physician, and that rural health was important to Oregon. The Primary Loan Forgiveness Program removed barriers to my ultimate goal to become a rural physician. Thank you for allowing me to share this brief testimony.
Thank you. Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Chairman Rowe. So where do you want to live?
So I'm from Willamina, Oregon, originally, and I'm currently planning to apply to become a rural general surgeon. So while I fully recognize that Willamina probably does not need a rural general surgeon, I did my rural scholars rotation over in John Day and was absolutely enamored with the critical access centers. So I don't know if it would necessarily be going back to John Day, but that's something that I certainly visualize for myself in the future.
Well, thank you so much for your service. My goodness. Thanks.
Co-chair Comp, co-chair Monroe, and members of the committee. Hi, my name is Sarah Paith, for the record, and I'm a registered nurse and also a first-year nurse midwifery student at OHSU. I'd like to thank you for having me here today and for listening to how this scholarship has drastically influenced my life. I grew up in Toledo, a little town on the Oregon coast. I really enjoyed small town life, often, you know, clamming and fishing on the weekend, being really involved in the high school events, and working really closely with my community. And when I say involved with my community, I mean not only do I know everyone in town, but I know what their cars look like too. I could give you the statistics on poverty in rural Oregon and the lack of access to health care in these areas, but chances are you're very familiar with them already. What you can't read about are the stories behind those statistics, the people that make up those numbers. I'm one of those people. It was my friend who didn't eat lunch for 2 days in the school cafeteria because her tooth was rotten and she didn't have a dentist. It's the kids that I went to school with that worked to support their own parents and siblings because their parents had drug addictions. And I mean, they weren't spending the money on movies and clothes, but they were literally paying for rent and food for their families. It was my bandmate who slept in his car in the school parking lot because he lived too far from school to drive back and forth and didn't have enough gas money. Sometimes when we talk about poverty, we can get caught up in the specific numbers and what those numbers mean. To me, and to perhaps some of you, these facts aren't just numbers. They're people. They're my schoolmates, they're my peers, they're my community members. These are the people that made me want to become a nurse. The first time that I realized the huge impact that access to healthcare has on our lives was when I was in high school, when we received our first school-based health center. This health center was ran by a nurse and was utilized by students, but also by parents and community members as well. I realized the drastic impact that this had on my friends and peers in high school. For once, we had healthcare right where we needed it. We didn't have to take time off of school to drive one or two towns over to go see a doctor. We didn't need insurance in order to get the care we needed. We were taken care of, no matter what. I became an advocate for school-based health centers at the age of 14 and rallied my community around our health center, often traveling to the state capitol, writing articles in the local newspaper, and doing anything I could to spread awareness about this resource. When budget cuts threatened to shut down our school-based health center, we fought to keep it open. I saw the powerful impact that a nurse could have on a community, and well, I guess I just couldn't shake that idea. I studied public health at Oregon State University, served in AmeriCorps, and later went on to nursing school at OHSU to pursue my dream of becoming a nurse. My passion for comprehensive women's health care, prenatal and birth care, has led me to pursue a career as a certified nurse midwife. Though I worked two jobs throughout high school and college to support myself, I did not have the financial means to pay for graduate school. Due to the rigorous curriculum and clinical schedule, working as an RN throughout the program is not encouraged. I did try to work a little throughout midwifery school, but I'm learning that babies come when they want to come, and for some reason, bosses don't take that excuse well. I applied for the Scholars for Healthy Oregon initiative the day it came out, after reading about it in the paper and following its progress through legislature. I can't articulate the joy that I felt when I read the letter saying I'd been accepted into this program. It meant that I didn't have to do the program part-time in order to work, and it meant that I didn't have to take out massive amounts of student loans in order to pay for school. Above all, it meant that I could practice in rural Oregon without having to worry about how I would pay back my student loans. Rural Oregon is my home, and it's where I want to go back to. Having come from that area and already knowing the culture, I feel like I'll be well prepared to go back and serve these communities. This scholarship is about more than just getting providers in rural Oregon. It's about placing bright and talented providers who already understand the rural culture back into these communities in a very sustainable way. I want to learn at one of the best institutions in the country and then be able to take that expertise back to my community. The most important part of this scholarship for me is that I get to stay in Oregon. There is a gross lack of obstetric providers in rural communities, and nurse midwives are so desperately needed to fill that gap. My dream is to provide compassionate, evidence-based midwifery care to women and families along the rural Oregon coast. Scholars for Healthy Oregon Initiative lets me take a job based on what is important to me, not whether or not the job pays enough to pay back all of my loans. Scholars for Healthy Oregon really has helped my dream of becoming a certified nurse midwife in a rural area a reality, because I can afford to go to the school that I want and work in the area that I love. And as we say in the birth world, that's a pretty smooth delivery. I can't tell you which rural part of Oregon I'll be practicing in over the next few years, but if you're ever in Warm Springs or Lakeview or Baker City and your daughter or granddaughter happens to go into labor, you'll be glad that you invested in my education so that I can be the midwife on call for your family. I hope that you will continue to support this program so that other nurses like me can follow their dreams of providing high quality health care to those who need it most. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming. Appreciate hearing your stories, and just makes me glad that Representative Comp and I have supported this program so strongly. Doug, who's next?
The other three that have signed up are Mark Fischel, Jock Sassel or something like that from AFSCME, and Joe Esmond. I'm sorry. I know I butchered a name there. Joe, I bet. Go ahead, whoever.
Thank you for coming. Why don't you go ahead and start?
Sure. Thank you, co-chairs Betty Comp and Rod Monroe, for having me here. Thanks to the member of the committee. My name is Mark Fischel. I'm speaking on behalf of the OMA. I'm on the Board of Trustees for the OMA and on the Executive Committee for the OMA, and I've been a physician in Salem for 15 years. So we have a handout, but I actually, they had to edit some numbers. I didn't think they were accurate. So there's a handout. You can have everything I'm saying if you want later, but I wanted to make sure it was accurate. The OMA urges your full support for full funding of the School of Medicine and the Office of Rural Health. I don't read with glasses, sorry, at Oregon Health and Science University. We feel that not funding or underfunding these programs would negatively impact the healthcare education program that are vital to Oregonians and would only further exacerbate our state's workforce shortage. If you look at the numbers, approximately one-third of practicing physicians in Oregon have either gotten their full education or part of their education in Oregon. If you look at the med students, about 46% who go to medical school in Oregon stay in Oregon. This ranks 10th in the country. If you look at postgraduate education, fellowships, and residencies, about 50 to 60% of those people stay in the state once you get them here. If you look at the recent 2015 U.S. News and World Report, Oregon OHSU ranks fifth in primary care. Of the top 10, it's the most expensive school to go to for in-state tuition. If you compare it to University of Washington, which is number one, it's $8,000 more a year for in-state tuition. Let me see here. We had a bunch of students on their scholarship program as well. All of them are testing today, so I'm their surrogate. We had a nice letter from Alex Polston, and so I'm supposed to quote Alex. Alex grew up in Banks, single parent family. Wanted to go to medical school, really wanted to stay in Oregon, but came to the decision that the debt load would be too big and he was going to go where he could practice medicine and not have that debt load until he got offered a scholarship. He gets offered a scholarship, he goes to Oregon, and we're going to get a family medicine physician in a rural town, and not only are we going to get a good doctor, we're going to get somebody who grew up in the area who influences thousands of patients, and they're going to know that if they work hard and they're educated, they can get their education here. And most of those kids, they're not going to go to med school, but there's a lot of educators up there, and you know, once you get them motivated, once you get them interested, those kids are going to have any opportunity they want. So I'd like to think that we're influencing people from the top and the bottom. If you fund the medical school, we're going to have a destination school where great faculty wants to be there, where students want to go to the great faculty, and the next thing we need to do is make it accessible to the kind of students we want to have. Thank you for your time, and I can answer any questions if you want.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, my name is Joe Basler. I work for Oregon AFSCME. I apologize for my terrible handwriting. It's not your fault. I know I wrote it very badly. Oregon AFSCME represents its OHSU workers. We represent over 5,000 members there. It's our largest unit. It's also, I think, I was talking to Connie Seely about it, we're probably one of our most diverse. I mean, we represent food service workers, janitors, folks, technicians at the primate center, polygraphic technicians, sleep techs. I can't believe I screwed that up, too. We are pretty much all over the map, everywhere from different clinics all over the state. I just want to say that we have a very good relationship with OHSU. It is by far one of our best employers. We have we have disputes that come up all the time, but they're resolved very quickly. I think we haven't had there has been no major fights for years. I think there are a lot of opportunities for our workers to get educational benefits and to take time to better themselves. And the university or the OHSU has been very great in sort of making sure those opportunities are available to our workers. So I just want to mainly say the state's investment in OHSU is really is getting a great return, and that we're very supportive of the continuing that investment. So thank you.
Joe, is there any chance you could be loaned out to the Port of Portland?
I'll have to talk to the boss, but not probably. You should talk to Joe.
And co-chair.
Joe, I was wondering, we recently had a bill about animal research. Have you had any incidents at the primate center?
We haven't had any incidents at the primate center, but the bill was eliminating the sunset on the protections
right.
for the folks who work at the primate center. Because the sunset's been in place for over a decade, I think now, there hadn't been really any incidents. And in comparable places around the country, though, in California, for instance, there have been incidents. But we sort of continued the protection that they're already having. I mean, I should tell you, like, there haven't been the same sort of incidents, but our folks also work in the mailroom. And the mailroom regularly gets threatening, not that I don't say regularly, but has occasionally get very threatening letters to the folks who work in the primate center. Luckily, they don't know their names, so they don't know where they live, so they can't. Those threats can't continue to their home, but it does happen.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead.
Good morning, co-chairs Monroe, Comp. My name is Joe Esmond. I'm business agent for the IBW Local 48 in Portland, Oregon, representing 4,400 members in the Portland metro area. I'm here to speak again on behalf of our organization in favor of OHSU. Actually, I worked on the buildings as an electrician, and they haven't burned up. They have become an economic engine in Portland and, by extension, in other parts of the state. I was a safety officer for one of our larger contractors, and one or twice, unfortunately, I had to bring our members into the ER, and man, plus I've had some family members in the ER. So yes, yes, and yes. And I've had the good fortune, my oldest son is a graduate of the med school. He's now a surgical intern. I call him a surgical apprentice. Up at OHSU. This is the son who never wanted to work with his father on projects around the house with his hands. So he also, he got a master's in public health. I didn't ask how much it cost. But anyway, over the years, I asked him, basically about the staff and what's the response? Are they answering your questions? You get, it's always yes, yes, and yes. So we have with OHSU, we have a jewel there for our state. And again, 100% behind this. And I'll take any questions.
Okay, are there questions for any of these witnesses? Gentlemen, thank you for coming. We appreciate your input. Is there anybody else here who would like to testify on House Bill 5024, the OHSU budget? And Mr. Wilson?
Mr. Chair, tomorrow, first part of the meeting will be a short public testimony for those folks that couldn't testify for the Community College Day. We invited those folks back. And then the hope is that Ben and his crew can finish up with HEC. Then Monday is OEIB. And that may bleed into Tuesday, we'll see. And
yeah,
then
bleed is right.
Proper day for it.
Might need a transfusion, yes.
And then on Wednesday, we'll pick up with the public testimony continuing from yesterday, and that will then be the end of phase one. And we'll probably do some work sessions right off the bat with some of the other smaller licensing before bringing back ODE, Department of Education.
Well, I've got to say, I'm very proud of OHSU, and I'm proud of the fact that we have in Oregon one of the finest teaching hospitals in the world, not just in the country, but in the world. And they have done remarkable work for a number of Oregonians, including me. I have a rare blood disorder called polycythemia. And for years, I had an oncologist, an elderly oncologist, that was treating me like I had cancer, and I don't have cancer. And finally, he retired, and I got a younger doctor who said, you need to go up to OHSU and find out if they can find some better treatment for you, because you shouldn't be treated with chemo like you have cancer. And so he set me up with the he was a part-time teacher at OHSU, and he set me up with the head professor up there, and they figured out a different medication for me that I've been taking now for the last year and a half, mm-hmm. and with no side effects. I used to have terrible side effects, as Representative Comp will tell you. I'd be sick for a week after one of these treatments. Now, no side effects at all. And, you know, I give OHSU a lot of the credit. Their professor, one of the top experts, knew something about this rare disorder. My bone marrow tends to make too much blood, and they don't want that to happen because it might cause a stroke. So I'm being well treated. My blood numbers are beautiful. They don't have to phlebotomize me anymore. That means bleed you. They don't have to do that anymore. And I just feel so much better. But mostly I'm just proud of OHSU and proud of the work they do in our community and proud of the businesses that contribute to that effort, such as the Snitzers, certainly such as Knight and his folks. Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I, too, just a very brief thank you. I look at OHSU as our shiny star up in Portland. I can't see all your lights from Woodburn, but I know that hospital is functioning 24/7, 7 days a week, you know, 365 days a year. And I would hope that all of our people in Oregon feel a sense of comfort and knowledge that we have a functioning system like that, where we're preparing our doctors, we're preparing our nurses, and yet we can go up there and get the health care any of us deserve. So thank you.
And it's good to hear that because of the new program, we'll be funding doctors and dentists into the rural and underserved areas of our state and providing them with a more affordable education. That's exciting, and allowing them to stay here in our beautiful state of Oregon.
Yep.
And serve our wonderful people. Anything else? Anybody else want to make speeches or anything?
Oh, and thank you for getting through 72 or 74 slides.
Okay. We're adjourned. Thank you.
Without making us busy.